Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. It is Tuesday, September 1st. We finally are to the latter third of the last third of the 2020 calendar year. It has been a struggle, I'm sure, for all of us for many different reasons and on many different levels. I hope that you and your family, wherever y'all are listening, y'all are well and safe. Thank you for making Locked On Grizzlies a part of your daily routine. You can find me on Twitter at StatsSAC, the show at Locked On Grizz, and you can find the podcast anywhere podcasts are available: Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, platforms, wherever that may be. Myself, if you're a new listener and you wanted to start listening to the podcast to get information on the Grizzlies and what should be an adventurous offseason, I'm Sean Coleman. I started with Grizzly Bear Blues as a writer a few years back. I've also picked up podcasting along the way. Former Locked On Grizzlies host Mark King, he's been a good friend for over a decade. He got me into writing and podcasting with the Grizzlies. I used to be a host with the 3&D podcast, did that independently and over at GBB for over a year, then came over to Locked On Grizzlies in April, and now, of course, am your host. Think about me, the things that I can offer are passion and perspective. I'm very passionate about the Grizzlies. I'm very passionate about the NBA sports in general. I like to get creative and in-depth when it comes to my opinions on what's going on with the Grizzlies and the NBA in general. And the big thing that I love to do is interact with others who share the same passions as I do. So it's always an honor and a privilege anytime I can spend time giving you my perspective and, you know, giving you insight on the thing that we all love, and that is the Memphis Grizzlies. Before we get started, also do want to mention our title sponsor, BuiltBar.com. If you go to BuiltBar.com right now, you can get $10 off your next order using the promo code LOCKEDON. It's a great addition to your daily routine to add health and taste. Again, go to BuiltBar.com, put in the promo code LOCKEDON, $10 off your first order. As I mentioned last week, the focus of this week is going to be player review. Each segment of each show, looking at a player or players who were relevant to the Grizzlies' success this season, answering a bunch of questions about how they played this year and what their future role with the Grizzlies may be. And we're going to jump right into it and focus on Gorgui Dieng. Gorgui Dieng, unlike many other players that were on the Grizzlies' team, he was someone who was added after the summer of 2019 at the trade deadline in the big trade that involved Andre Iguodala and Justice Winslow. Kind of a background of it is that, so the Grizzlies, when they entered the season, it seemed like Taylor Jenkins was really focused on his preference of playing the game with pace and space. Smaller lineups that can get out, that can get on the perimeter, can get in transition, and can shoot the ball. Well, as time wore on and the Grizzlies were coming to the trade deadline, one thing about the roster that was pretty evident was that the wear and tear of the season were starting to have impacts on Jonas Valanciunas, Brandon Clark, and Jaren Jackson Jr. So as the Grizzlies were working their way through scenarios in which they could trade Andre Iguodala, they found a solution to also add reinforcements to their front court. In the trade, the Grizzlies sent Iguodala, Solomon Hill, and Jay Crowder, basically the veterans on the roster at the time, to the Miami Heat for Deion Waiters, James Johnson, and Justice Winslow. Now, of course, getting Justice Winslow at the price that they did was the main get for the Grizzlies, but they also took James Johnson. They cut Deion Waiters. They didn't want him to be on the roster, but they then took James Johnson and sent him to Minnesota to get Gorgui Dieng. Now, Gorgui Dieng is in the third year of a four-year contract in which he's basically being paid $15 to $16 million a year. Is that overpriced? Probably. But that doesn't take away from the relevance that Gorgui Dieng offers. He has established himself as one of the more underrated backup bigs in the league. And now with him in place, the Grizzlies had the ability to have another big body that they could put in the game to take a little bit of pressure and the wear and tear off of their other bigs. And it wound up being very, very relevant because, as we know, as we headed into February, past the All-Star break and into early March, the Grizzlies were without both Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr. for extended periods of time. But it wasn't just in terms of the roster where Gorgui Dieng made a little bit of sense. The other part of the equation was because of his two-way ability on both defense and offense in the second unit that made him attractive. For one, Gorgui Dieng had trended in a very positive direction when it came to his shooting from three. Gorgui Dieng in his career has certainly made a shift. Basically, his shooting preference has continued to shift away from the basket as his career has progressed. For instance, when it comes to his shooting percentages of where he takes his shots, in the first 2 years of his career, he shot 61% of his shots and 52% of his shots at the rim. Well, this past year, Gorgui Dieng shot a little over a third of his shots from three. So as time has gone on, Gorgui Dieng has evolved his game to more of the needed shooting from all positions that are on the court. Well, to begin this year with Minnesota, he was finding initial success. He was making nearly 39% of his threes, which was within the 85th percentile of players at his position in the NBA. That's what made him attractive for the Grizzlies. Also, Gorgui Dieng was near the 90th percentile in terms of both blocks and steals per players at his position per cleaningtheglass.com. So he was both making defensive impact and also finding success from three, something that the Grizzlies really had put a preference on, and they seemed to hope that they would get with Gorgui Dieng. Well, when he came over to Memphis, he continued to produce at similar levels, both offensively and defensively, that he had with Minnesota. The one thing that took a bit of a step back was the fact that Gorgui struggled from three. He wound up only making 8 out of 32 three-point shots, you know, for the rest of the regular season. During the time between when he was traded to the Grizzlies and before the suspension of the season, Gorgui Dieng again was playing that role, basically as the third big off the bench of a lot of nights for the Grizzlies. But a telling sign in that as his time went on with Memphis, he may have become less of an ideal fit for Taylor Jenkins' system is the performance in the bubble. The first three games in which the Grizzlies had Jaren Jackson Jr. healthy, Gorgui Dieng got very little playing time. And the fact that Anthony Tolliver, a guy who the Grizzlies signed to a 10-day contract right before the season suspended, was getting the preferred playing time over Gorgui Dieng, a player in the third year of a four-year, $64 million contract, was very telling. It showed that at the end of the day, Taylor Jenkins still prefers that option that's going to be more reliable from three in a lot of his lineups. So where does that leave Dieng? He still is a productive big. The Grizzlies still have a year left of control over him, and the Grizzlies would likely be just fine keeping him on the roster. Tolliver, other names are going to be free agents in the summer, so keeping Gorgui Dieng and having a four-man rotation in the post of Dieng, Brandon Clark, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Jonas Valanciunas, you could do a lot worse. That's a very attractive depth as far as the four and five positions go. But also, Gorgui Dieng could emerge as potentially a trade piece, especially in a situation where the Grizzlies could match money. For instance, if Memphis finds another talent, like they did with Justice Winslow, one that's at a discounted value but they feel could definitely be a find for them, Gorgui Dieng could be used as a matching salary piece to trade for that option. He also could be used as a matching salary piece if the Grizzlies were to find an unwanted contract somewhere that they could gain another pick with, kind of like they did with Andre Iguodala getting the first from Golden State. If they want to take on another big contract and get a draft pick as a result and then send Dieng maybe to a contender, for instance, to be able to complete the trade, that would be beneficial as well. So in the end, Gorgui Dieng still offers good production as a second unit big. But for the Grizzlies long term, with his contract expiring after next season, he may be more valuable as a trade chip than he would be as a relevant reserve next season. This offseason likely will make it less likely than most offseasons that they're able to have as many options to trade him, but he still could be beneficial in the right trade. But at the end of the day, if he winds up staying on the roster, he will be the fourth big in a very, very good four and five spot rotation for the Grizzlies. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll get to the next player in our player review series. Welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. And as I mentioned last week, and this will be a continuing trend this week, we're going to be looking segment by segment of each show at players that were relevant to the Grizzlies' success this year, talk about the positives and negatives of their season, and also discuss what that means in the long term for them as Grizzlies. And one of the more interesting cases that will emerge this offseason is, of course, Josh Jackson. Now, Josh Jackson, for a player who did not play the majority of the season, to be honest, in terms of in the NBA, he certainly was a source of storylines as the season progressed. Obviously, he was acquired with the Anthony Melton. The Grizzlies traded Mike Conley to the Utah Jazz, and in exchange got several pieces, including Kyle Korver. Well, they wound up trading Korver and Javon Carter to the Phoenix Suns in another deal for De'Anthony Melton, Josh Jackson, and 2 second-round picks. At one of the, you know, maybe not at the forefront of the deals that the Grizzlies made, but obviously an extremely beneficial one for Memphis this season. Well, of course, De'Anthony Melton, who we'll talk about later this week, emerged as a revelation and potential long-term piece for the Grizzlies. But Josh Jackson also had a lot of positives from his season as well. Obviously, the number 4 overall pick, despite coming off an all-rookie season during the 17-18 year for the Suns, Josh Jackson simply did not see his career developed as most had hoped. Off the court issues, you know, tension with the Suns organization, a lot of different factors, you know, both caused by Jackson and outside of his control, just did not lead to it working out with the Suns. So the Grizzlies brought him on here in Memphis. Of course, though, there was a plan in place for Jackson, and that started off with him beginning the season with the Hustle in South Haven. Now, on the court, Jackson showed that he clearly didn't belong, and what I mean by that is that night in and night out, he usually was the best player on the court, showed he certainly had the talent to be in the NBA. But there also was the part about him, you know, continuing his development off the court, and despite one blip on the radar, which led to a suspension of a game, he was on the up and up. Josh Jackson did everything that was expected of him and then some when it came to the Grizzlies' plan on working him into their plans as far as the 2019-2020 season developed. While it was hopeful that he may get his opportunity in early December when the Grizzlies were running into a bit of injury issues, it was not until late January that Josh Jackson actually came into the fold. But the thing about it is this, is that it actually did not take much time for him to develop into a contributing member of the Grizzlies. In overall, Jackson for the Grizzlies this season played 22 games, basically 17 before the season was suspended. But the big thing that Jackson provided was an extra piece off the bench. Compared to the first 2 years of his career, Josh Jackson shot better overall, 44% from the field on his shots. He did continue to struggle a bit from three, only made 32% of his shots. So far in his career, despite averaging 3 three-pointers per game, he's only made 30% of his threes, so that certainly is a part of his game that right now is more of a weakness than a strength. However, on two-pointers, Jackson made nearly 54% of his shots compared to around 45% over his first 2 years in Phoenix. So his utilization and his scoring ability certainly improved during his time in Memphis. In fact, he had an offensive rating of 103 in Memphis, whereas he had an offensive rating of 93 and 91 while he was in Phoenix. In general, Josh Jackson was a fit for Taylor Jenkins' system to an extent. He was very good in transition. The pace of his play was certainly there. He was good in transition. He also was a good option for finishing and as a slasher element in terms of the offense. But the most value that Jackson, in my opinion, has added while he has been on the court when he's played in his NBA career is through his defense. We saw that from the fact that he added value defensively when he was on the court with the Phoenix Suns. If you look back at the 2018-2019 season with Phoenix, Josh Jackson was a frequently seen name among the Suns' best lineups, best 3- and 4-man lineups when it comes to defensive rating. Well, with the Grizzlies, that remained a fact. For any 3-man lineup of the Grizzlies that played 50 or more minutes this season, Jackson was on the units that produced the best net rating and the 3rd-best net rating. And a big part of that was because how good they were defensively. The reason why Josh Jackson is so good the reason why Josh Jackson has good defensive potential is because of his body composition. He's both long and lean and very quick. He can make a difference both on the perimeter and in the post. Evidence of that is his playmaking ability on defense. Josh Jackson has played 4,328 minutes in his career so far through 3 years. For players that have played 4,300 minutes over the past 3 seasons, in other words, from the 2017-2018 season till now, Josh Jackson is one of only 11 players who have played at least 4,300 minutes that have produced a steal percentage and block percentage above 1.9%. Now, that may not seem that significant, but consider the other 10 names that are a part of that group of the 11 total in the NBA. Current Grizzly Kyle Anderson is one of them. As we all know, he does have very good defensive potential himself. But the other are 9 names: Anthony Davis, Nikola Jokic, Andre Drummond, Willie Cauley-Stein, Robert Covington, Danny Green, Draymond Green, Kelly Oubre, and Kent Bazemore. Now, the difference between those players, first, you have a wide range, obviously, of values in those players. But the big thing about it is that they're also players who can make plays defensively. You've got Defensive Player of the Year options, clear quality 3 and D options in terms of the players on that list. Josh Jackson's on that not on that level yet because he still is developing his offensive game. But in general, that shows that Josh Jackson does have significant defensive potential. And in second units across the NBA where talent is less, that type of potential can truly make a difference, as it did over the short term with the Grizzlies. So yes, there was a lot of positive initial value that Josh Jackson added. However, the suspension of the season and the restart may have actually been a detriment to Jackson than it was a positive. Once the bubble got started, despite all the injuries that had occurred and Jackson being looked upon as potentially getting a bigger role with Memphis, he actually did not play that much at all. In fact, you know, other players, like for instance John Concher and other players such as that, Jackson still remained 9th or 10th in the rotation despite there being clear opportunity for him to play. One of the reasons why could be the fact that he simply does not have the offensive game that right now makes sense for Taylor Jenkins. Another reason as to why that may be the case is because of all the players that currently are on the Grizzlies roster, Jackson is the most likely to be on his way out, and not necessarily for a negative reason. A few reasons as to why is because the Grizzlies have found other players that clearly fit the role that they need and or Taylor Jenkins' system better. And also, they're limited on how much they can actually spend towards Jackson. Since they declined his option before the season, they can only offer 1 year up to the amount that they declined it. I believe that his option was around $8 to $9 million. Josh Jackson likely could find a multi-year deal for more overall money with a, you know, for instance, rebuilding team on the open market, and of course he should, you know, take as much guaranteed money as possible with how his career has gone to this point. But basically with Josh Jackson, even if he were to be on his way from the Grizzlies, if he were to leave in free agency, there still was clear positive value. While Jackson himself may not have played his way into the Grizzlies' future plans, he hopefully has played his way into another team's future plans. It's unlikely that he's ever going to live up to the potential of being the 4th overall pick in the 2017 draft. But it does seem like if he could continue to develop his offensive game, he could be a very valuable member of some team's bench unit in the NBA. For the Grizzlies, another big byproduct of the success that they found with Jackson and Melton and others, but especially Jackson, is that the Grizzlies have shown that they can be the type of culture that can bring in a questionable player for whatever reason, a talented but questionable player, and mold him, get his career back on track. That could be of high significance for the Grizzlies, because if they are not that big of a free agency destination, but can get players who may not be looked upon as options for other teams, if they can gain value from those type of players as the future goes on and they continue to try to build a contender, that's a great way to continue building a bench. They showed it through Josh Jackson. Hopefully, if they can become a desired destination for players who are in similar situations as Jackson was before Memphis, that could be a great advantage as the Grizzlies fill out their roster and continue to hope for good depth on future teams. So overall, it seems unlikely at this point, especially when you consider the comments of Zach Kleiman at this end of the season pressers. It seemed like that he was talking more about it being a positive experience for Jackson this year than him necessarily being a priority over the offseason. It seems, though, that both the Grizzlies and Josh Jackson benefited from the year that they had together. And the more opportunities that the Grizzlies can have that ends like that, where both them and the player benefit if the player were to eventually leave, the better it's going to be for Memphis long term. Once we return for the last segment of the show, we're going to go over a couple of names who filled out the end of the bench, but could and whose opportunities with the Grizzlies are going in opposite directions. If you're like me, you'd love to add ways to benefit your health to your daily routine. For some of us, it's hard. For others, it's just a priority that easily can be added. Well, one way that I can tell you is easy to add to your daily routine is Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Typically, when you hear of health bars, you either have to sacrifice health for taste or taste for health. But with Built Bar, they're both one and the same. It's a great option to have it as part of your breakfast, before or after a workout, maybe as an afternoon snack while you're listening to your favorite Locked On Podcast Network show. And that's the thing. The relationship between Built Bar and Locked On can benefit you as well. If you go to BuiltBar.com right now, put on the promo code Locked On, you'll get $10 off your first order. And I can tell you this with confidence, it won't be your last. I personally like the peanut butter flavor. There's lots of flavors and other options to consider at BuiltBar.com. Again, if you go to BuiltBar.com right now, put in the promo code Locked On, you'll get $10 off your next order at BuiltBar.com. As we've discussed, it'll be interesting to see how the situations with Gorgui Dieng, who is under contract but could, potentially be more attractive as a trade piece than a relevant part of the Grizzlies' rotation next season. And Josh Jackson, probably at this point the one player on the Grizzlies' current roster that is most likely to be playing elsewhere next year. It'll be interesting to see how their situations play out. However, as I discussed with Drew Hill last week, I think the most interesting development this offseason will be how the Grizzlies' backcourt situation plays out. And I'll go ahead and say this. The most likely scenario is that the top five options in the Grizzlies' backcourt that we saw this season will likely be back next season in their roles. That is, Ja Morant and Dylan Brooks as the starters, with Tyus Jones, DeAnthony Melton, and Grayson Allen playing their roles off the bench. Now, each of those players have a role to play for different reasons based off their skill sets. But the thing about it is this, is that quantity is there. And also, despite Melton, each of the other four options are in place for the Grizzlies for multiple years. They are controlled by the Grizzlies for at least two more years each. But another scenario that we could see play out is, what if Melton heads elsewhere to play? Or what if another one of those options are involved in a trade? There are a couple of other Grizzlies players whose futures with the teams could be dependent on that. And that's Marko Gudurić and John Concher. Now, in limited roles, both of these players got to experience their first taste of the NBA. And both players also saw their future outlooks change from what it had been at the beginning of the season. For instance, with Gudurić, he was part of the roster makeover in the summer of 2019. He was the one option that the Grizzlies chose to pursue in terms of adding a foreign talent to the roster. And the reason why he was intriguing, because a clear weakness of the Grizzlies going into this season, shocker, was shooting. Well, that was Gudurić's reputation, his potential to contribute from the perimeter with his shot. The Grizzlies signed him to a two-year deal worth a little bit over $5.3 million. So not a relevant financial contribution, but the hope was since he didn't cost a lot in terms of salary, he may be able to provide good value. He was an intriguing option before the season started. A lot of people viewed him as being the person that was not known a lot about on the roster that could become relevant or play a relevant role. And the Grizzlies gave him that opportunity. In the first quarter of the season, Gudurić was playing about 10 to 15 minutes per night off the bench. However, the thing about it is that as Gudurić played, it just was hard for there to find positive value in the contributions that he made. In 484 minutes this season, Gudurić shot the ball 157 times from the field. He made 62% error. He made 62 shots overall. He shot 157 times, made 62% of his shots. That was good for 39.5% from the field. He was 25 of 83 from three. That was good for 30% from the field. The thing about those numbers are this, is that if you're supposed to be known for your shooting, and you're shooting 40% of the field, and half of those shots come from three, and you're shooting 33% from three, especially when 96% of those shots are in catch-and-shoot situations, which, number one, should be easier to make than pull-up situations, and are easier to replace than pull-up situations, there's not a lot of value being added. Now, to be fair to Gudurich, over in his per-36-minute scale, he did average 5 rebounds, 3 assists, and nearly a steal per 36 minutes. So there were other ways in which he contributed. But when you look at the holistic stats, and when you look at the value-added stats, there's just not a lot that Gudurich offered that can be viewed as positive. He clearly was not, when the 1st of December came, and other players like DeAnthony Melton, taking advantage of his opportunity, Tyus Jones getting on track, when there was clear opportunity for Gudurich to step into a bigger role, he did not. His lack of production and quality play moved him to the back of the bench instead of allowing for him to take on a bigger role. And his other talents, like Josh Jackson, came into the fold. Gudurich was buried on the bench with nowhere to go. Overall, the result of that is this, is that Gudurich is likely going to be on the Grizzlies. He signed with them through the 2021 season. But it's unlikely, unless he significantly improves his shot or starts to contribute positive value elsewhere in his game, it's very likely that he's again going to be on the back of the bench. And once his contract expires after next season, it's hard to see where the Grizzlies really have him in their future plans. While Gudurich kind of saw his outlook, decline or take a turn for the worst, another benefit of having a coaching staff that can develop the roster from top to bottom, if it's not working out for one option, another one should emerge. And that comes for the Grizzlies in the form of John Concher. Now, John Concher was signed as a two-way option during the summer of 2019, and he was not drafted in the draft. However, he was viewed as an attractive potential NBA candidate for two ways and the G League by multiple teams because of his production in college. Once he signed with the Grizzlies, Concher's production in college got a lot of recognition. From several notable perspectives, his across-the-board contributions in college were viewed as historic. And that fit the type of mold that the Grizzlies were looking for. The Grizzlies value highly productive talents that are also highly intelligent in the game of basketball when they're looking to add young talents to their roster. Well, as Concher got started in South Haven, his role continued to grow, and he continued to show that across-the-board contribution. And eventually, he found his way into some NBA games. Now, he only played 181 minutes, so the stats that he produced, yes, they are very intriguing, and they're very positive, but in the general scheme of things, have very little value due to the small sample size. But Concher was 24 for 37 from the field, 67% from the field in his shooting, and also 5 of 10 for 3. What that shows is that, yes, while you can't put much into that, it at least shows that he has smart shot selection and the ability to contribute from multiple levels when scoring. But the even bigger positive that came from his play was, again, his across-the-board contribution. Per 36 minutes, Concher averaged 10.7 points. He averaged 9.3 rebounds and 3.6 offensive rebounds. For a guard to be able to add that type of rebounding ability, especially when the Grizzlies have a rebounding need on their second units, is a big development. He also averaged 4.4 assists per game and 1.4 steals, or per 36 minutes. So it shows that both on defense and offense, he could contribute in multiple ways. The reason why that's significant for Concher is not because it's expected that he's going to be, he's going to emerge next year on the level of a Melton or a Grayson Allen. But a couple of things come to mind when you look at Concher's, the type of skill set that he has and the way that his development is taking shape. For a few reasons, he could be worth the Grizzlies investing into for the future now that his two-way contract has expired. For one, a lot of the better teams across the league have parts of their bench, have members of their rotation that started out in the G League, developed, were across-the-board contributors while they were developing, and now have become high-quality contributors due to their work ethic and intelligence. That's the type of mold that Concher is as a player. So if the Grizzlies are going to emerge as one of those types of development teams, as one of the better teams at developing talent, it seems like that they could start to find talents that could develop in the G League and eventually become a part of their rotation, and John Conshers seems to fit that mold. The other thing about it is that say DeAnthony Melton were to go elsewhere and play next year, say another member of the Grizzlies' backcourt were to be used in a trade. Well, now Conshers becomes a logical option to potentially step into the role, since he'll have been in the Grizzlies system for more than a year, and Taylor Jenkins knows how to utilize him. So in terms of John Conshers, I think that he certainly is worth an investment. He also seems to certainly be adding positive value. He's a fan favorite for sure. He seems to be adding positive value to the culture that's trying to be built here. At the end of the day, if Conshers were to take his talents elsewhere, it's not that big of a blow to the Grizzlies' long-term plans. However, knowing with the Grizzlies' knowledge and them having displayed the type of ability that they have to develop talents from Ja Morant all the way down to the ninth or tenth guy in the rotation, Conshers seems to be the type of guy that they want in the fold to see if they can maximize his potential and eventually make him a part of the rotation. So there you have it, kind of a back end of the bench review of the Grizzlies roster so far, looking at Gorgui Dieng, Josh Jackson, Marko Gudurić, and John Conshers. In terms of Dieng, Jackson, and Gudurić, it seems like that their contributions or their value to the Grizzlies as far as the future goes may not necessarily be there. And for Jackson, it's him leaving. Gudurić eventually his contract playing out. With Dieng, he may be a trade candidate. For John Conshers, on the other hand, he could be worth an investment and to a certain extent could be a priority for the Grizzlies to extend his stay here in Memphis to see how he eventually develops. As I stated earlier in the podcast, we're going to continue this over the next few days, talking about all the players that were relevant to the Grizzlies' success this season. We do want to remind you, you can follow us on Twitter, myself at StatsSAC, the show at Locked on Grizz. You can follow the podcast anywhere podcasts are available. And again, interact with us. Leave us reviews. Subscribe. Listen to us. Let me know if there's content you'd like to be covered. We certainly want to make sure we're always providing content that's relevant to the preferences of our listeners. Thank you so much for taking time to listen to us today, and we'll talk to you soon here on the Locked on Grizzlies podcast.